Hey, this is Nick Jonas, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn.
Oh, damn, oh, damn, oh, damn, I'm so perplexed with this one.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. But this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to the show. I'm Dan Dunn. What we're drinking on this episode is tequila. I know what you're saying. You had tequila last episode. That's right, I did. That was Villa One Tequila with Nick Jonas, John Barbados. On this episode, I'm drinking Casa Azul Tequila with comedian Big J Okerson. So it's a completely different thing, except for the tequila. Two different brands of tequila, same spirit. But you know what? Cinco de Mayo's coming up. That's what we're doing. I'm getting ready. I might even have tequila in the next episode. I know. Next episode is John Taffer. We will not be having tequila, but maybe the episode after that, the day before Cinco de Mayo, that probably will be a tequila one too. So just deal with it, people. Deal with it. Oh, my goodness. So yeah, Big J Okerson on the show. Philly boy, fellow Philly boy. Very excited about that. Invite you to follow me at The Imbiber. Follow the podcast at WWD_podcast. Got a website called whatwe'redrinking.com. All kinds of stuff happening out there in the internet sphere. As I mentioned, we're going to be drinking Casa Azul tequila today. Casa Azul. Now, not Class Azul, different one. Casa Azul, one word. Casazul. Big fan of the tequila. An old friend of mine is involved with the brand. Not that that has anything to do with why it's on the show. Wink, wink. No, I just like it. It's a produced and bottled in Jalisco, Mexico. In the town of Tequila itself, they use 100% Blue Weber agave that they source from both the highlands and the lowlands of Jalisco. So you're going to get some balance going on there. They that Blue Weber agave, it takes about 7 years for those things to be ready when they harvest them. And then, oh man, if you've ever been down there, it's great to watch. They quarter them and they crush them to get the juice. And then they ferment the juice into alcohol and they store that juice for like 30 to 45 days in these big stainless, beautiful stainless tanks. And once that alcohol settles, they finish it and it's beautiful. Casa Azul tequila. They've got silver, reposado, añejo, and extra añejo. Bunch of different brands. I don't know how Jay's going to drink. And I know I'm going to have some reposado in a margarita. I'm going to sip some añejo. Yeah, and it's all reasonably priced stuff too. We're talking between $30 and $60 some, you know, starting with the silver and on up to the extra añejo. Really good stuff. Beautiful bottle. I think it's important to have beautiful bottles on the bar. Man, I'm excited. Why am I so excited? It's tequila, I guess. It's getting me crazy. Tequila. I got some ideas for you. By the way, we're going to throw these out there, creative cocktail ideas, since we do have Cinco de Mayo coming up. One of them, you could do a tequila milkshake. I would say the Casa Azul Añejo tequila. Put it in a blender with some Abuelitos Mole chocolate and agave nectar. You could also just make it in a big vat. But if you just want to do it in a blender, really, really delicious. It's served in a chilled milkshake glass. And it looks like something you'd get in an ice cream shop. Another drink is called the Horny Prick. You make this one with prickly pear, which is sometimes referred to as the desert tuna. The key to this one is to properly peel the prickly pear. It could get nasty in your throat. Definitely some potential for danger there if you don't peel that prickly pear the right way. And you got to muddle that fruit up with lime juice, agave nectar. And I would do the Casa Azul Silver for that one. And what you're going to get is this like kind of electric fuchsia-colored concoction. It's very eye-catching. And I got one I like called the Dirty Tijuana. It's a spicy drink. You make it with hot sauce, chili, pepper. Again, I would go with the silver Casa Azul for this. You're going to get that slightly sweet herbal thing going on. It's going to work really well in this drink. You know what? Get a premium olive juice. My friends at Dirty Sue, right here in Hollywood, California, they make that Dirty Sue. Get some of that. Garnish it with jalapeno stuffed olives. Oh, man, that's a good one, the Dirty Tijuana. And then, you know, if you really just want to do, you want to be authentic, try the Bandera. It's the way real Mexicans enjoy tequila. It's named for the Mexican flag. It consists of three ingredients, and they're each served separately in tall shot glasses. So in the first one, representing the green stripe, is lime juice. I would go with Persian limes, which are sweeter and yellower than the American variety. And then in the middle glass goes the tequila. That would be, again, the Casa Azul Silver. And in the final glass goes a red shot of Sangrita, which is essentially super spicy Bloody Mary mix. And as far as the drinking order on that, there isn't one. It's freestyle. You know, sip some tequila, a little lime juice, or tequila, Sangrita, lime. Mix, match. Have some fun, people. Have some fun with it. So yeah, I gave you, don't say I didn't equip you, get you ready for Cinco de Mayo. If you want more information about the brand, go to Casazul, CASAZUL.com. I have a couple things to tell you about. As I mentioned, John Taffer is going to be on the next episode. And on Monday, May 3rd, I will be on doing my regular gig on the Adam Carolla Show. This one's going to be the top five spirits that we've had on my Corolla segments. We've had well over 60 since pandemic started. It's going to be the top five. We're going to celebrate sort of the end in sight here for the pandemic. And we're going to do that on Monday, May 3rd on the Adam Carolla Show. As always, I invite you to send me questions, comments. I'm happy to read them here on the show, address them on the show. You can either, again, go to the Imbiber, send me a message on Instagram. You can email me, email info@whatwe'redrinking.com, info@whatwe'redrinking.com. And if you want to leave a little voice memo thing, I'll play it on the show. I will do that for you because I care. You mean something to me. You really do. Almost as much as this tequila means to me. Let me have a little bit of it here. Oh, I love it. And now, a word from one of our dream sponsors, Löwenbräu Beer, circa 1982.
Used to good friends.
Do you guys realize this is our fourth summer place together?
Remember that old beach house we had?
How about the time you two almost set the woods on fire?
Okay. Who's ready for a Löwenbräu?
When you want the taste of a truly great American beer, tonight, let it be Löwenbräu.
You know, I think we finally got this down to an art.
Let it be Löwenbräu.
As the host of a show called What We're Drinking, people often ask me, hey, what are you drinking? When it comes to American-made whiskey, my go-to is Rabbit Hole. The unique recipes were created by their founder, a guy named Kaveh. He and his team at Rabbit Hole spare no expense in making their bourbon and rye. They have their own cooking methods and use top-of-the-line grains. They never chill filter, and they use barrels that are toasted, charred, and wood-fired, which almost nobody does. What you end up with is a line of bourbon and rye with these really rich, deep flavors that are unlike anything you've ever tasted. What are you having? It's a question as old as the bartending profession itself. And if you ask me, the answer is Rabbit Hole. Joining me now, a comedian who has had numerous Comedy Central specials, appeared on Inside Amy Schumer, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, Conan, who hasn't, Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn, HBO's Crashing, P. Diddy's Bad Boys of Comedy, and This Is Not Happening with Ari Shaffir. Are you impressed yet? All right, I'll keep going. He's played festivals, Bonnaroo, Gathering of the Juggalos, Funny or Die's Oddball Festival. He co-hosted Movies on Tap on Spike TV, played Neil on the series Z-Rock, and appeared on multiple episodes of the acclaimed television series Louie. And I'm pretty sure he didn't even have to witness any masturbation in order to get that gig. Finally, along with his good buddy Dan Soder, he co-hosts The Bonfire on Sirius XM's Faction Talk. He's the pride of Philadelphia, Big J Oakerson. Jay, how are you, brother?
I'm doing good, man.
We ran out of time. That intro. Got to go.
The master of disaster, the king of sting.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I mean, I'm drinking tequila at home on a Tuesday. Can't be that bad.
We got the Casa Azul tequila. I teed that up earlier in the show. We got some sent to Jay. Where are you, man? You're in New York?
Yep. New York City, Hell's Kitchen area.
But you are a Philly boy like myself. Born in, what part of Philly are you from?
From West Philadelphia, originally Overbrook. You know the Overbrook area?
Of course I do, man. Yeah. I'm Northeast Philly. We're a little bit classier over there. A little bit.
A little bit more. You're Delisandro's. You're Delisandro's steaks.
Steve's Prince of Steaks, too. By the end of this podcast, we're both going to be talking like we're completely back in Philadelphia. It always happens.
Yeah, water. It's always when water. That's what hits me. We're going to get some water.
Well, there's this show, man. I don't know. There's a show that just came on HBO called Mare of Easttown, M-A-R-E, like a woman's name. It's Kate Winslet. It's the first show that I've really seen in a long time where they... I'm watching the show. I didn't have any idea what it was about. And they start talking. I'm like, wait a minute. She's nailing the Philly accent.
Oh, it takes place in Philly?
Easttown is like a fictional Delaware County, like suburb of Philly. And you know, Jay, like, in fact, I ended up Googling and I found this great article. I think it was on Salon or something about how the Philly accent is so hard to replicate that it's rarely ever done. You rarely see it. And they pointed out, look at the most famous movies from Philadelphia. Silver Linings Playbook. I watched an interview with Bradley Cooper, who's from the Philly area. They asked him why he didn't do a Philly accent in the movie. And he said, because nobody else was doing it. And it would have stood out, him doing it. Because De Niro's not going to do it, you know. And Rocky. I mean, he's doing a New York accent, Stallone, in Rocky.
Yeah, there's no Philly accent in anything Rocky ever. Paulie didn't have one. Nobody. And that is frustrating as all hell. It is a hard accent to perfect with every word because there's no rhyme or reason to it. There's not a rule to that accent where it's like this letter swap out for this letter. It makes sense, you know, like where there's no R's in Boston, you know, if it's just something AR, just drag that A out. You know, that's the rule. There's really no like A isn't always like double O, like water instead of water. You know, it's like, that's not always the rule. It doesn't hold off like that. It's a...
Didn't is one. Like, didn't you do that? Like, nobody says didn't. It's didn't.
Yeah. Didn't you do that? Yeah.
I think the O's are the big tell. Hoagie, Poconos, you know, home.
Ron Bennington always used to go, you want to go have a Coke and a hoagie on a houseboat?
That's it. But
some of that house.
I was super impressed, man. And this article made a great point, which is, it's so hard to do that even if you're from Philadelphia and you hear it done properly, it almost sounds fake because you're so not used to ever hearing it. The one that pulled it off was Nick Kroll do you remember the Pennsylvania sketch? Now, is he from Philly? Because how did he do it? He was so good, Nick Kroll.
I don't think he is.
And the Pittsburgh accent's completely fucked up too, right?
Yins. That's the big thing. Yins. Which I just don't even know the proper usage of yins at all.
John. John's a Philly one, right? John is the catch-all phrase. You can use John for anything. It can mean anything, right?
It's just noun, Your John could be your girlfriend, your car, your glove. It could really be anything.
Anything you have, anything you possess can be your John.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it means thing. It means person, place, or thing.
We're way behind on having a toast here. So what do you got? Now I've got the Casa Azul Añejo, and you can see here, Jay, because I am from Northeast Philadelphia, the classy part.
That is classy.
I'm drinking it out of a champagne flute, which is the proper way to or tequila glass. Actually, looks like a champagne flute, but this is a proper tequila tasting glass if you're going to be sipping a nice tequila. So because we can get the swirl going like this. And now you, on the other hand, being from Overbrook, you're slamming the silver tequila with a little Corona chaser.
Yeah, I got some
in a plastic cup.
So it chills it. I don't even pour it out of the ice into a cup by itself chilled. I just drink it right off the ice and then pour some more in. It makes the most sense.
Coming together. Two people from other side of the tracks in Philadelphia. By the way, when I say that, my neighborhood is a shithole too. Philly. I grew up in Frankfurt. Actually, you wouldn't be caught dead in Frankfurt, I don't think. But yeah, it's... Cheers, buddy. It's really great to have you on. As I mentioned in the intro, you've got so much going on, you know, as far as you can in this COVID time that sure. It looks like we're coming out of. First off, I do have to ask you, you didn't have to watch Louis beat off, right? That didn't happen?
Nope. And I offered to, before this even happened, I was like, hey, man, any chance you want to whack off in front of me? He was not into it. He wasn't into it at all.
Was that an insult? Like, you're like, why not me?
Yeah. I'm like, am I not good enough to get beat off by in front of this guy? There's a great story. There's a great story, too, the Louis thing, though. It was my first time ever. I was, oddly enough, driving to Pittsburgh for a gig, because I remember this. It was the first time I'd gotten a phone call, and it was from Pig Newton Productions, which is a production company. And they go, hey, would you want to be – I knew Louis was getting ready to do a show, but this was the pilot. And they go, Louis wants to know if you want to be in the pilot for the show. We'd be filming Monday. And this was the weekend, and I was like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, you mean like audition for a part? And they go, no. He said he wrote the part for you and he wants you to play. It's just a couple lines in this thing. And I was like, whoa, I was so touched by that. And then they go, shortly we'll send you the sides over so you can read it over the script. And I was like, great. And they sent it over. When I got in my room that night after my show in Pittsburgh, I got in my hotel room and I opened it, and the character description was like, you know, his name was like whatever, Gary, and it was like slovenly, fat, gross, trucker, greasy, sweaty pig. And I was like, oh, like he wrote this for me. And then to Louis' credit, man, I always say, I don't even know how it got back to him that way. I think I made a joke to the lady when I read that. And she may have told Louis, because Louis ran over to me and he was like, and by the way, he might just be being nice. It's also touching if he wrote it for me, but he goes, no, JJJ, I heard that she said, I didn't write the part for you. We auditioned plenty of people. We just couldn't find anybody who had the right look. He really was a good backpedal.
Was slovenly enough.
He said we couldn't find anybody who had the right look who could do the lines well. So I said I'd rather have the line read funny than worry about having the big fat slob. But I mean, I sort of still fit the description. But he did run over and try to like run an interference in that, which was sweet of him for sure.
This is ground that's been covered by smarter people than me. But I do have a lot of friends. We have a lot of mutual friends who are comedians. Mm-hmm. And I am a Louis fan. And I, again, at the risk of not going down this, oh, what do you think of cancel culture? But is there a road back for a guy like him? Like, I know he's already doing stuff and he's already, you know, making money, but is there a way back to mainstream acceptance again for someone like him, or is it always going to be more of a niche thing?
I think there's some kind of path maybe, but like, I don't think he'd be willing to do what that path is. I don't think he should do what that path is. And I think he'll be able to perform he'll make a ton of money performing for the people that just like, you know, are over it. They get it. You know what I mean? Like he ate shit for sure. He got a lot of stuff he lost from it. You know, is it a creepy thing? Yeah, absolutely. Did it destroy lives? I guess who am I to say, but like, didn't seem like it. Do you know what I mean? It just seems like he was like, and he got vilified. He was one of the first guys. So he got like strung up hard, but yeah, I don't think he'd want to. If I were him, I'd be like, nah, let me just perform for like the people that want to see it can see it. I'll still make, the guy can make 5 to 6 figures in like a weekend. If not, you know, more than that. People still come. You know what I mean? He could just do it like that quietly when he wants to and live the rest of his life very comfortably.
I remember Matt Damon got in a world of shit for having the audacity to suggest that not everybody gets put in the same bucket.
Yeah.
Aziz Ansari should not be tossed in with Harvey Weinstein, you know,
with
some of these people. And that was what was happening. Now, again, with Louis, it was sex and sexuality and the way people get off and the things they do and the dynamics of sex, right?
Yeah.
It's such a fragile house of cards, right? Like any little thing can topple it. Fucking, who is the arbiter of that? Who's the person that says this has gone too far? This is because I think that almost anybody out there that's listening right now, if your freaky deaky shit that you like to do, the stuff that gets you off, was made fucking public, you know, you might lose your job too. You know, you're not, you know, and it's like, who's to decide? I get it. I understand in the case of Louis, it was, he's lording over people who, with whom he has authority in the workplace.
I do believe whatever it means. I don't know. I said, when he reflected upon it, he was like, oh, I see now that I was in a position of power, but like, as a person who does that too, like I would never, if I was like hitting on a young comic myself, I really wouldn't assume, like, I definitely wouldn't want them to like succumb to it because of my position in comedy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, what comedian thinks he's in a position? Comedians by nature are the most insecure motherfuckers, at least I know, right? I don't know many comedians that ever feel like they're in a position of power, because if they were, they wouldn't be good comedians.
So what I will say for Louis, to keep it funny to some degree on this, though, it is like, how do you present? It's easier to almost ask, like, hey, do you want to have sex, and have them say no, and then you know it's like, all right, we know kind of know where we're at here. To have to present your thing that's like not even sex, and not even that you don't even want sex, you want to do this thing. Do you know what I mean? This like odd thing.
Sure.
And ask them, it's like, how do you present? Is there a perfect way to present it? If you're just like, no, I don't want to have sex with you. That would be too much. I just want you to like fart in my mouth while I jerk off. And it's like, they run away from that story much more like, this guy's a sociopathic creep. He's like, I didn't even try to fuck you. I just wanted you to fart in my mouth. But how do I bring it up without being a creep? Like, it's a weird thing for sure.
Do you worry about how people perceive you that don't know you? Like, in other words, in this age now where nothing's private, nothing's secret.
I don't worry how they perceive me. I worry about how they perceive me and then state that, like, they're just right. That's what I mean. Like, if you perceive me as racist, like, you've taken, like, much of my things and crazy wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've – or I should say – I shouldn't even say you've taken them in wrong. You've taken them not the way I intended them to go – to hit you. Do you know what I mean? I meant it to hit you funny, but you say, but you think it's racist. And like, that's like, that sucks. I hate that happens, but like, I'm willing to accept that collateral damage, that some people just kind of won't get it and they'll just draw a wacky conclusion. What I hate is that person now has just as much a voice as any other person in this world to go, hey, this guy is a racist or is a not, you know, it's pretty wacky.
And has gotten lost. But sure. That's gone now, right? Like, I remember watching it. I watched one of your jokes. I watch a lot of your stuff, but I was watching one of your stand-ups recently, and you were talking about being in a hotel in Alaska, and someone was knocking on the door, and he was a Puerto Rican guy.
Puerto Rican, yeah.
And you said you were worried he was going to do Puerto Rican things, right?
Yeah.
Talk about that for a minute. Is there, when you did that joke, was probably a couple of years ago, right? Is there any...
Yeah, that was a very long time ago, actually. It's from my 2008.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, well, then you didn't worry about it at all back then. But when you look back on something like that, are there any...
Like regrets at all?
Yeah, anything?
No, not at all. I don't think so. Not at all, because like, that's almost what I mean about it. Like, to regret it would have to mean that like I meant some ill will to it. Now, if you were like, hey, this dumb joke you said cost you something really big that you wanted, you know, it cost you really big... Then you go, do you regret saying it? I go, yeah, I guess so. Like, I feel like it unjustly cost me this, like, major thing or money or something in my life. Like, I'm like, no, that's – then, yeah, I do regret it. Regret saying, like, the joke – I don't regret it because nothing I've ever said comedically is meant in, like, malice at all. It's meant for silly. Now, I know it's, like, oftentimes at someone's expense, but, like – and I always say this, and, like, in the bitchiest, most, like – schoolyard way, it's meant to be behind their backs for a pocket of people that are listening to it for us to all snicker together. Do you know what I mean? I'm just doing that on a grander scale, and I realize that there is collateral damage, but like, upon meeting anybody I've ever shit on, we go at Corey Feldman pretty hard on my radio show. If Corey Feldman came on, the first thing would be such a fucking verbal BJ session on him, because we have to first get out the thing. It's like, oh shit, this is Corey Feldman. Then you got to go, hey, dude, what's with this wacky music and what the hell's going on with you and your crazy life and all this shit? You know, like, then all the things we make fun of, but there's still like that, oh shit, he's Corey Feldman, like, moment, you know, of like respect. But I don't know, to backtrack to what you were saying though, like the days of those things are gone. They're still here, but it's like, it has to be called so grossly. Like, it's almost like a black market of like comedy. You have to go to like the podcast networks, which, you know, we have and we do. So it's like, I like it in that regard. And I like that it can be like the Wild West, but like, I have like limits. Like, there's things that like someone could say that I'd be like, oh, I don't stand by that. Like, the joke wasn't funny enough and I'm not like getting, you know what I mean? And not because I go, I am totally fine. You were trying to be funny. So I don't think you should be punished in any way. I'm just going like, I'm not cool. That didn't make me laugh. So it was like, I don't know. You were just trying to be like, cause a problem almost. Like you were just trying to say something provocative without any comedic value to it.
Have you ever told a joke that you mentioned, you kind of touched on it earlier where it could be someone got hurt by it. Have you ever told a joke that was clearly based on someone, they knew it was based on him and they called you out on it?
Yeah. Yeah, a couple. Nothing like really, actually nothing really too like devastating. I've had to run things by my daughter that I talk about her. She got older. She's 18 now. So like, she was getting like in her teen years and she knew what I did and she kind of understood it. I would tell her before I did something on television or something about, you know, not for like club sets and stuff. That doesn't matter. But when things were being recorded and I was going to do a joke about her that was like, you know, my stuff's definitely like crass and it's dirty humor. You know, it's a, sure. It's a blue. I love that term, but it was, yeah, you know, that's how I the only thing I would ever have to approach is her, and she's never had a problem with anything I've said in comedy.
Do you ever have any, you know, now that everything's recorded and you can't really, unlike, you know, a band, it's such an opposite thing in comedy. When you're in a band, if you don't play all the shit that they, you know, like the old stuff, people are like, what the fuck? Yeah. Whereas with comedy, you can't. Are there jokes and routines that you've done over the years that you just miss, man? You're like, God, I want to bust that. I would love to bust that back out.
No.
No? It's no, once you do it, it's all done. It's gone?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do it for like, you know, any couple jokes that I'll have, like long bits, like I'll probably do for like a few years before I like put it into a special or something. You know, that's how like the specials are, at least for me, seem to be drug out like a couple years in between. So like for 2 years, I'll build up like an hour or so just from like, but I draw that off from like crowd work and storytelling. And then it just drifts off into my points and nonsense. And then I usually get in trouble at some point. And then I have talk about that and how like ridiculous I think the trouble is. You know, it's funny. The Netflix did an interesting thing. And Robbie Prawl over there, who I love, Robbie, dear friend, but you know, he's just the messenger of these things. Tom Segura said the word retard in one of his specials, and because that happened, they got some backlash for that, Netflix. So I had a bit in my half hour I did for Netflix that I still do. I do it on the road, so the good news is like I didn't have to kill it on the road because it was on a special, but I still want to do it on a special. But it was about getting flack for using the word retards on the radio. And Tom Segura, I don't know what the joke was exactly, where he said retards or what it was about, but what I tried to explain to Netflix was, this joke, though, I talk about someone getting angry that I said the word on the radio, and then I over-explain the idea that I go, I understand why this guy was upset. I don't necessarily agree with it, but rather than make an argument with a guy who I assumed he was so passionate about that I shouldn't have said this, he wanted me fired for saying retards, that I assumed he had family members or something that was family, you know, kids or whatever that were mentally challenged, and he heard me say retards on a radio show, and he got angry. And the whole point is explaining that I understand. Now, it does wrap around to be a coarse joke for sure, but it's a grander point within the joke. And as I explain that as long and boringly as I just did now to him, it goes, it doesn't matter. The word retard's in it. And that's what bummed me out, because I go, man, this was such a great joke to explain the heart of, I understand that sucks, man, and I apologize. But then also explain that, like, people make it all about them. This guy, I realized upon apologizing to him in our back and forth that's explaining the joke, is that he's putting it on me like I'm the enemy of, like, his life and what he has to deal with. And I'm like, oh, dude, when I said it, I wasn't talking about your kid, you know, who he was upset about. I was like, I wasn't talking about her, but I still apologized, and he kind of kept coming at me, and is the point of the story. But I think that was a thing that would have been good to say, because it explains both sides of it well, with understanding on both sides. And that's just not – so, again, it almost – it goes to the thing where I say how many critics I've had where I'm like, hey, why don't we talk? Why don't we talk this out publicly even? I'll talk it out, because whatever you're calling me, I'm not. So I don't have to watch what I say or make sure we're not live or anything. Like I'll do whatever form. Let's talk. No, you're bullying us into a debate or something. I mean, the craziest things I've gotten back for stuff like this. But
what's interesting about the word retard, and by the way, all the flags are going up now before I say this, but what is interesting about the word retard is, and I get it why people get upset, but it's really kind of the one word that, like, the group that it's targeted at doesn't give a fuck.
Because I'm still pretty sure it's the medical term. I don't think when you say something's retarded, like, you know, you're talking about like you're talking about difference. Like, oh, this is like a deviation from the norm. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you're talking about it in the most literal sense, that you're not going like, when you say something like, oh, this sandwich is retarded good, you're not going, this sandwich is those stupid slack jaw bumbling idiots good.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's not what you mean. like, but they go, well, you're using the word, but still you use the word. He goes, dude, context has to matter. Or what do we do? Are we robots talking? Like, tone? No, that's why texting sucks. That's why social media sucks with just the written word, because there's no tone. And people say you're a horrible person. He goes, yeah, I guess if you read, you know, have you ever seen when they do, I'm sorry to cut you, I'm rambling.
No, it's totally fine. But you made me think of something. Not long ago, I had Bryan Cranston was on the show. And when I was cutting promo together for the episode, mm-hmm. It was a really funny exchange with he and I. We had been talking about bar fights earlier in the show. And then I recounted a story where I was in New York City and I ran into Preet Bharara, the former U.S. The district U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Trump fired him. He was a famous guy, kind of. And Cranston made a joke at the end that was really funny. And it was basically a joke that was based on my fictional girlfriend that I didn't have at the time, fictionally sleeping with Preet Bharara. You know, he said something like, oh, I'll just say what he fucking said. He goes, oh, did this end in a bar fight? And I said, well, yeah, I kicked his ass because he slept with my girlfriend. That I didn't have a girlfriend. And clearly he didn't sleep with my girlfriend. And right. And Bryan Cranston goes, well, who hasn't? And I went, well, yeah, who hasn't? And even then I tried it like subconsciously save it. I go, yeah, who hasn't Preet Bharara slept with? But anyway, he goes, who hasn't? So I cut this promo together and I show a friend, and my friend says, I wouldn't run that promo. Because he's slut shaming Bryan Cranston. Not that he is, but someone could accuse him of slut shaming. So by making a joke about who hasn't slept with my fictional girlfriend who fictionally slept with Preet Bharara, he could, and I realized, you know what? Someone fucking will. Someone will. And I didn't want to cause problems for Bryan Cranston. So I didn't, you know, he would never say that about a real person. He would never do that.
Dan, the stupid people have the same access to having their voice heard as anybody else, and advertisers are afraid of stupid people making a stink about something. It's insane that you have to describe that you're joking about something that's that obviously joking. Like, it's again, and then they make it a thing, slut shaming, fat shaming, and all these crazy things that are just like, you know.
By the way, I heard Louis C.K. Fat shamed you once by writing a script.
She really did that, son of a bitch.
See, I just want to make sure I can recall things, because I'm drinking tequila, so I have to recall from the earlier in the Louis.
I'm waiting for his big comeback, and then I'm going to bring him down for fat shaming.
You should be like, Louis, tell that story. Go like weepy. Go on Ellen and be like, I need to tell you about the time Louis C.K. fat shamed me.
No, it's really like it's a bad thing. I don't. We said we're protecting like the stupid. Like, you have to explain that you're joking about something that shouldn't require that. You know, it's what happened to Shane Gillis with the SNL thing. It's like, you have to come out. It's like, well, he did these like racist Asian terms and whatever. And the whole impression was whatever. And it's like, you have to come out of it. It's like, again, it's like a magician going, it's like, well, we can't walk out of here believing you are magic, sir. Show me how you did it. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, you have to come out and go, no, well, it goes, okay, the thing was, I said the words because that was the words that the ignorant person would use as the character we were doing, describing being like white men in the 50s seeing Chinatown for the first time. And so we sunk into those characters without saying it. We just started changing our voices a little bit, and we said some coarse words. And you have to just like, because they just go, Shane Gillis does Ching Chong voices and whatever. It's like,
I mean, come on, man.
You know what's dangerous, Jay, is when we say stupid people, but it's smart stupid people. It's people that otherwise, they're...
No, it's susceptible. It's susceptible people. It's people who can be hypnotized. It's people who are so open to suggestion that the slightest thing makes them move on it without even thinking, because I've never met one that can argue me well at all, where I have to, I'll concede. And I've conceded on things where I'm like, sure, I understand why you feel that way. That the joke where I say retard is very evident of that. I get it. But like the other people, they're so passionate without thought behind what they're saying. They're just going with like the general moral of everything. So once the problem is, once they sling at me like, and I think black people shouldn't be killed by the police, and I go, of goddamn course they shouldn't. Then they go, wait, I thought, okay, you made that joke about female cops before, so I was thinking that you made a joke about female cops, so I thought maybe you were racist. You know what I mean? Like, it just kills the thing when you go, yeah, no, I was making a joke, but of course that's a terrible thing that's going on.
And it's stuff like that that makes me crazy, where I go, just the term, my truth. It's, you hear that bandied about it. There's no your truth. There's a truth. There's what's wrong, and then there's truth. There's your interpretation. There's your opinion. But you don't get your own truth. Stuff that's true is true, right or wrong.
No,
God
absolutely.
Damn it, let's have some tequila. This thing's get way too heavy. Nope. Let's have a drink of tequila quickly.
But you are absolutely right. Like, exactly. That's my point I'm saying. Like, you can say the truth is Jay told a joke where he said blah, 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 and it was a black person stealing, right? Somewhere in the punchline is a black person stealing something, whatever. It's a dumb fucking cast off thing. Without having to explain to the audience, like, when I make that joke, you're doing it in like the blah, there's the fucking old uncle racist joke you hear at the fucking Thanksgiving thing table, you know, when no black people, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's like the wonk wonk of it. Of a ridiculous joke, and the thing, but if you don't explain it to them, they go home thinking you're like, this guy was just preaching the word up there. He goes, no, it's just horse shit. Like,
it's comedy.
I say it's a bummer, because I said this on stage recently, and people like argued with me after the show. Even like, it's positive, it's all sweet, but I was like, if I hear one more person tell me how important comedy is, like, I'm gonna fucking like choke on my own vomit. I mean, and then people after the show go, no, it's important, man. We work fucking warehouse jobs and these radio shows and your podcast and all this stuff. Like, nah, man, that's like, we're with you every day. And it is important. I go, no, you know what? Entertainment that we provide is important. But stop taking what we say. We're not fucking street profits, man. Like, I've never said anything that I'm like, how profound. I just keep yelling out the obvious, like, things like stop saying this crazy shit. I haven't figured something out, some recipe. You're just, I'm doing something in complete lighthearted nonsense, and you're going, this is gospel shitty speaking about whatever his feelings about women and people of color. I have the most general, I'd be blown away by people who don't have the most basic morals I have. You know, we're sitting here on the day that George Floyd's killer, I guess, technically, you know,
got
like
convicted.
Got convicted. And it's like, when you hear that, like, what do you think? I go, it's like another cop sandbag. Cause I'm like, nah, dude, exactly. That's fucking, this guy was like, that's crazy what he did to him. Like, it's not, he should be convicted of murder.
Of course. Like, yeah, of course.
I also don't think that, I also don't think that means every time a black guy has a gun in his belt and coke in his pocket and a bunch of little baggies and the cops arrest him, like they're harassing him. Do you know exactly what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's like, there's also black drug dealers, man. Like, what's a, but like, don't kill him either, please. Like, don't kill the black drug dealer.
And again, Jay, dumb. Let's have some tequila, quick. Yeah. You're upsetting me. You're really upsetting me now. I didn't think we were going to go here.
No, so, you know what? This is a good conversation.
No, I like it. Now, you got the silver tequila?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do that. I'm doing see if it makes you feel better. What do you think of the taste? This is a show called What We're Drinking. What do you think of the taste of the tequila?
It's exactly what I hope for silver tequila, because I'm such a lame-o at booze. It tastes like nothing.
It, you mean like it's not smooth. It's very smooth, and it's smooth.
Not overbearing at all.
Yeah, so I'm digging this Casa Azul, but as a wise man once said, a person can't live on tequila alone. A wise man was my Uncle Knuckles. Knuckles was a rum guy. Loved his rum. I do too. He was more, you know, Bacardi. I'm Batiste rum, which is the first sustainable American craft rum. Batiste. I call it the 3R rum because the makers of Batiste rum practice regenerative agriculture. They use renewable energy and they make responsible choices, unlike my Uncle Fonzo. And here's the kicker, baby. Here's the kicker. Batiste rum is made from 100% pure, fresh cane juice. If you like your tequila 100% agave, then you're going to love your rum 100% cane juice. It is distilled sunshine. Check out BatisteRum.com to learn more. That's BatisteRhum. The way it's the tip of the hat to the French Caribbean, where Batiste rum is sourced. Go there, check it out, try it. And Uncle Fonzo, I miss you, buddy. So you don't like stuff that just, you don't like stuff that's too much, too complex, too much going on.
No, I just have, I don't know what it is. I have such a gag reflex on booze. When I used to go out with Dave Attell on the road all the time, when he was drinking still, he hasn't drank in a long time now, but when he was drinking still, tells you how long I've been in comedy, I was with him at a point where Jaeger was his drink. And
which always ends so, well.
So when I'd go on the road with him, like as not much of a drinker as I still am not really, like I'd do some Jaeger shots with him. And the taste was so red. It's one of my least favorite flavors is the black licorice flavor.
That, yeah.
I can't take it. But like I'd choke it down with like a Diet Coke or something with him. Many times on stage, I said he'd bring me on stage at the end of the show. And he'd say, let's do a shot. The end of the show, and he'd get us two Jaeger shots, and I would have nothing with. I started to learn to bring a soda up with me or something, because he would have me do a shot, and a few times I got stuck up there with no chaser and just had to take that down and smile to an audience, which was bizarre.
Yeah.
But one time, my last time I think ever having Jaeger, I went with him to Mohegan Sun for a gig, and we went in after the show. We went into one of like the bars upstairs. It was very clubby, this place, very loud music, but we were in it just to have a drink or so. And what I was drinking at the time, it wasn't even a Jaeger at that point. At that point, I told him that my drink was, I used to do chilled vodka because it tastes like nothing. And I could just chase it with something and it would go down easy. And Attell is such, one of the most generous, the most generous person I think in my entire life ever. It's pretty amazing what he's done for me. And like, he's a guy, if we'd go on the road, he would buy me 5 packs of cigarettes for the road. But what's very Dave Attell about it is like, I'd smoke at the time Marlboro Ultralights and he would get me 5 packs of Marlboro Lights. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. It's so generous, but also not paying attention enough to know the thing.
Yep.
So for probably months with him at this point, when I got off I had to throw up one night from Jaeger that just killed me on Jaeger. So he almost respected me having my own drink, but my drink was chilled vodka. And I went to the bathroom and I came out of the bathroom and Attell, thank God, had his back to me at this bar. And he over his shoulder, he looks at me and he goes, hey, that's a key. He goes, that vodka shot's for you right there. And I go, oh, cool. And I had my soda and I pounded this vodka shot, and again, just eat it. He just didn't know chilled. He ordered me a vodka shot, but it was warm. I can only describe it as piss warm, and it just hit my mouth, and I just instinctually welled it up in my mouth. And I'm just not good. I'm not good with texture and bad taste in my mouth. I get gaggy, and it just—I don't even think I got it down my throat. Like it just, the taste hit me so hard that I just threw up all over the bar right behind Dave Attell, and. But it wasn't hammered. It was just the taste and everything hit me. So I went into the bathroom and kind of cleaned myself up, finished throwing it up. And I was, you know, stone sober still. And I was like, man, I got to go out there and explain this. And when I walked out, the bartender was very coolly. Attell's back was still to it. He had no idea it happened. I still have no idea to this day if he knew if it happened. But the bartender was just, you know, ragging up my vomit off the bar and like looking at me and just like shaking his head no. And it was like, which was pretty cool of him. He didn't make it a thing because it should have been a thing. I yacked all over that casino bar. But
so with something like this, with the tequila, would you do a tequila cocktail? I mean, right now you're drinking the silver the Blanco neat, would you do tequila in a cocktail? Do you have a tequila drink that you like or no?
I'll mix it like tequila with like pineapple juice and just kind of drink it like that too. But my thing with booze, how it works, it's funny too. And I genuinely mean this. And I would say if I did, I have a problem with cigarettes for sure. I have a major addiction problem with cigarettes. Booze just never really struck me like that. Like, I don't like the taste of almost any of it. So I look for the thing that has like the least taste and the most smooth, just go down and can be masked with any other kind of flavor.
You're not drinking for the enjoyment necessarily. For you, it's like it's a delivery system. You just want the alcohol part of it. You're not really interested in the taste.
My recipe is, this is why I've never had a drinking problem ever. I don't drink sometimes just circumstantially for months. And then sometimes I drink for like 7 weekends in a row. You know what I mean? Like, but when I drink, when I say drink for 7 weekends in a row, over the course of a night of 2 shows on a weekend is usually when this will happen. I'll have, usually I won't drink at all Thursday, but Friday and Saturday, maybe a little bit. Generally only Friday. And if I do, it's over the course of 2 shows, 4 or 5 shots of chilled tequila and like maybe a beer chaser, but probably just soda. Because my thing, and when they bring it, I say, bring me 3 at first. And I knock those 3 down. And that is because I'm just like, let's get there. Let's have some fun. And then I don't have to sit here and sip this whole night against my better judgment. Like, then I can just drink a soda or a Michelob Ultra, low carbs, and just mill around and not have it. You know what I mean? Like, okay. And feel that looseness. I like to feel the looseness of it, but I don't like being drunk. Like where the room's, you know, no one likes being room spinning.
The room spinning in general. I meant, have you ever been drunk performing? That's got to be not good, right?
I'm sure it's happened, and I was just able to kind of pull it together, just kind of get through it. You know what I mean? Like, but not drunk where it's like I'm slurring my words, but like spacey maybe from it. I was like, oh, I drank a little too much. But like even tonight, I know now there's still a little bit left in this drink, but I'm not going to have any more because I'm like the next level from where I'm at now, I just know already is like, oh, I'm going to be like sloppy, make a weird phone call, like lay my head down. So I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I'd rather have dinner and watch a movie or TV show or something.
Yeah, I get that part of it, man. I'm out on the West Coast. So when I do these things, a lot of times it's early. So we'll have some drinks and then it's like, oh, wow, it's only 5 o'clock now and I've had 5 drinks. What am I going to do now?
Zipped.
Let me see if some ex-girlfriends want to hear from me.
Yeah. Oh, I got some ex-girlfriends I can curse
out.
Yeah,
let me do that. Well, Jay, this has been a lot of fun, man. I'm a big fan of your comedy. I think you have been doing it for a long time. You've been doing it well for a long time and you stick to your guns. One other thing I wanted to ask you about was the Skankfest. Is that still happening?
Yeah, I don't have the dates on it, but it is. It's announced, though. It's happening in November, I believe, in Houston, Texas, at the Secret Group. That's Skankfest South. And we should be announcing a date, I believe, for Skankfest New York soon. But if not, there will be one next year. Everything's gotten fucking wonky right now, but that is a... It's such a grassroots, amazing thing that Lewis, my partner on Legion of Skanks, and Rebecca Trent from The Creek in the Cave, and my girlfriend Christine, they put the whole thing together. And I mean, from concept to execution, it's gone from something that was like a couple hundred people to a couple thousand people in a few years, and it's been amazing. So it's cool to see that.
So November, that's coming back. And then one other quick thing, man, you moved off. I guess Comedy Central Radio got rid of all their talk shows and now you're on Faction Talk. What is Faction Talk? What is that?
I don't know at all. I think even everybody on the network actually complains about that, not fully sure what it means. But the more important thing than whatever the station's called is that after it says XL, which means we can say whatever we want.
You can do it. With Dan, he does that with Dan Soder. Dan, another comedian, he's also, you can see him on Billions. Mafia, very good on that.
All my partners, man, Dave Smith, Louis J. Gomez and Legion of Skanks, and Dan Soder on Bonfire. I get such a great opportunity to work with like the people that I think which is the most important to me, and that I think are the funniest fucking people in the world. And there's a lot of people that support that. So it's
them and Justin Silver.
And Justin Silver. No, I'm saying my whole group, the whole kind of the whole gaggle of friends. Like, I wouldn't hang out with anybody who I didn't think was like funny. You know what I mean? Because that's what I'd want to do. When we hang out, we want to like shit talk and be funny. And so, I mean, my guys, like my crew of people that I would say that were the crew that I'm in, rather, is just like the guys that I think are the funniest. So, yeah, I'm lucky as hell in that regard.
Big J Okerson likes his Casa Azul in a plastic cup with ice, cold, chilled, slamming back a Corona right after that. A Corona and a Marlboro Light Ultra, whatever the fuck you're smoking.
No, that was weed.
No, that was, he said, it's okay today. Well, actually, we are also recording this on 420. Today
we are
is 420, yeah. But Jay, where can people find you on social media?
At Big J Okerson on pretty much everything. It's Big J, B-I-G-J-A-Y, O-A-K-E-R-S-O-N. Yeah, you can follow me on all social media like that. Instagram's putting up a bunch of my stand-up stuff now. I've got a I got a regular situation going on where like they're putting out content pretty regularly. So yeah, check that out and enjoy a bonfire on Sirius XM, Faction Talk 103, Legion of Skanks and the Gas Digital Network. You can watch it free every Monday or every Friday. You can watch the shows for free, two a week.
Look at that. All the plugs. That I should have prepared that. I should have. You know what? I feel bad about myself because I don't prepare really much. Yeah. You know, I mean, I have the booze. I got you the booze. The booze got sent. That's preparation.
Yeah, the
booze
got sent.
You know, yeah, booze got sent. I always make sure that happens. Anyway, Big J Okerson, great having you, brother. Thanks for being on the show.
How about last night? You might have noticed Daddy acting a little strange, and you probably don't understand why.
I understand why. You were wasted.
I admit it. I didn't know when to say when.
That's going to do it for this episode of the show. I want to thank Big J Okerson for being on. Since we had a comedian on, and Jay is one of the best, I was flipping through a book I have called I Found This Funny, my favorite pieces of humor and some that may not be funny at all. It was edited by Judd Apatow. And in there is a piece by the late Nora Ephron called What I Wish I'd Known. I'm going to leave you with that today. This is what Nora Ephron wished she'd known. People have only one way to be. Buy, don't rent. Never marry a man you wouldn't want to be divorced from. Don't cover a couch with anything that isn't more or less beige. The last 4 years of psychoanalysis are a waste of money. Write everything down. Keep a journal. Take more pictures. You can order more than one dessert. Back up your files. Over-insure everything. The minute you decide to get divorced, go see a lawyer and file the papers. Over-tip. Never let them know. If only one-third of your clothes are mistakes, you're ahead of the game. If friends ask you to be their child's guardian in case they die in a plane crash, you can say no. And finally, there are no secrets.